Alright, let's call our meeting to order.
Murphy?
Here.
Buffo? Perry?
Here.
Ping?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Stuber?
Alright, join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And let's see here. Public comments. We don't have any. Well, engineer updates.
Hey.
Perfect, right there.
I think the first one I'll do is just talk about the motor fuel tax stuff. Basically, we got it. We received our bids on June 8th. One bidder, per usual, Ileana Construction Company.
Is that on there?
They were within about $1,000 of our estimate. So that was good to go. No real questions. I did talk to him today because I know the hope was that we could get that same steel slag material to use as our chipping material again. And it's scarce, but he said he thinks he's going to have enough to do the entire Tolono program with it. So that's good news. I don't know if there's any other questions about it. Otherwise, you guys just have to review and approve these, the bid awards. They're really the same thing. One's a tabulation and one would be the actual, it's just a single sheet.
Is it on there?
Yeah. All it is, the bid tab would usually have other people, but in this event, there's one bidder. So this and the award are the same thing for the most part. And then there's four copies of the award going down the right side there, which if you guys approve to award this contract, Rob will have to sign all four of those for us to send into our office.
Alright, I just need a motion.
The 193s are, I make a motion to accept the bid for MFT for 193,932.52 to Ileana Construction.
It's 50 cents, right?
Yep.
Need a second? Is that Jared? You seconded it.
I think both did, so.
Okay.
Take one.
Perry?
Yes.
Ping?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you.
If you guys want to keep copies of that bid tag, you can. I just need the award, the four award docs to submit in.
Yep, thanks.
It's
all you for a while, so.
Yeah. We found out that we had not done the annual MS4, which is basically your stormwater discharge. You guys, in recent years, were deemed large enough to have to basically be permitted for your stormwater discharges, so we filed the notice of intent, I think, 3 or 4 years ago, and now it requires you every once a year go through and kind of look at what are our best. Are we following our plan? Are we changing our plan? Things like that to identify issues with stormwater discharge and pollution. It's pretty general. I've only got two extra copies while I walk through this, but there's not a whole lot to this at this point. Basically, a lot of the stuff, thank you, a lot of the stuff is best management practice type stuff. So we'll just kind of walk through this stuff, open up the floor for questions or comments regarding it. You guys were issued your permit on February 10th, 2016, which will expire on February 28th, 2021. This report serves as the annual report for year two. It seemed confusing to me with that, but I think they didn't necessarily require reports until further down the line on this. So last year was year one's annual report. This is year two's annual report. Basically, there's, I think, six sections. The first section is public education and outreach. And we essentially said, the description and goal for this was to further educate people by producing pamphlets and information on, you know, best management practices for not polluting our stormwater systems. Year one was create the brochure, year two was just evaluate the existing outreach material and modify as necessary. No modifications were made. Basic pamphlets were reprinted as needed and placed at City Hall for anybody to look at. Number two is public participation and involvement, which is essentially this meeting. We were late on it last year. We did it like June 2nd last year. Now we're June 14th. Essentially, we should probably start having these in May. I put it on my calendar to remind me May 1st that we need to get this done, have this meeting, and then June 1st is when these are due. I don't think there's really any issue with it. You guys are we're still doing it. No concerns there. This is the public meeting. We're going to go through all this stuff, and then if anybody has any questions or concerns, we take that into consideration for further evaluation. Number three is illicit discharge detection elimination. Year one's goal was develop a plan and budget to create a storm sewer system map. Year two is develop storm sewer system map. Basically what we said is finances haven't been available to complete that yet, but we did indicate that you guys recently executed a contract with us to perform the storm sewer mapping updates, which we will be in the process of this summer going through mapping the facilities and creating a digital map that you guys will be able to share via PDF to anybody that wants it. And that's kind of the first step in the illicit discharge detection elimination plan that you guys also hired us to. Step one is getting the mapping done. Step two is kind of creating this plan to identify and detect and eliminate those. Number four is construction site runoff. This really is just saying, you know, all of the projects within the village that you guys are doing are, you know, following best management practices for erosion and sediment control on those. There were no projects requiring what they call a stormwater pollution prevention plan. It's when you're disturbing anything, I believe, over an acre. Nothing that you guys did this year had that, but any other miscellaneous construction happening, talked with Matt, and they essentially just made sure that everybody was aware of the erosion control and protection best management practices. The second part of that is the site inspection and enforcement, and that's, again, there was no major capital projects that had that this year, but like the East Street lift station coming up, the intent would be to, between Matt and us on that one, we'll make sure that the contractor's following all the erosion control best management practices to prevent sending erosion down storm sewers. Post-construction runoff control, this is just the next step, is once they're actually done with it, pulling erosion control and getting new grass established and things like that. Those all kind of go hand in hand. Number six is the pollution prevention, good housekeeping, which your goals for year one were clean grates and catch basins. Two was clean grates, catch basins, and culverts. And then that just repeats for the following years. We talked with Matt and said, I know they had a specific date that they had done it once, but then he also said they've done it other miscellaneous times as needed when they noticed the catch basins and inlets and grates need to be cleaned out. That's been complete for year two. There was no information collected or analyzed, basically saying we didn't pull any samples of any stormwater discharge, finding pollutants in it at this point. That will come into play when the illicit discharge detection and elimination plan comes in, and it kind of phases in, where phase one is visual inspection. If you smell or see anything that looks like it shouldn't be there, phase two would then be sampling and things of that nature. So that's probably a ways off unless something major is detected. Future stormwater activities, I just put in here that you guys are taking the steps to develop the illicit discharge detection elimination plan. You guys don't rely on anybody else, any other government entities to satisfy the permit obligations, and the construction project list is there were no construction projects during year two that related to this. And that's the annual report for this. If there's any questions about stormwater drainage, leave that open.
Yeah. We need bigger pipes.
I have one question.
Yep.
I heard, it might be more of a Mark question, but I heard through the grapevine that we could be charging a tax for stormwater?
So that's a challenging question. I've worked with that a lot in different communities. The challenge is, if you guys were home rule, it would be a lot easier to do it fairly. Fairly would be if you have a bunch of pavement, say you had a 5,000 square foot parking lot, you have more runoff that goes to the street, you would be charged more. The way it's set up is Illinois Municipal Code, and don't take me at legal advice, but just what I've read into it is, it doesn't specifically give you the right to charge a fee to provide drainage and things of that nature, but we're working with one community that's even smaller than you guys, definitely not home rule, and they're, I think, trying to succeed in doing this through a special service area, where the rate or the fee is implemented through the county's tax system, but it's implemented based on an impervious area calculation. I'm not sure how that's all going to hold up at this point. That's just kind of the route they've taken with their attorney at this time. Bigger cities all have stormwater utility fees now. You know, you charge the big entities, because the stormwater utility fee, if it's not charged as a fee and it's charged as a tax, it ends up missing exempt places like schools and churches that are some of the biggest producers of those things. So you want to try to figure out a way to divvy out who needs to pay for what, and most places don't have revenue to pay for storm sewer improvements, so it falls to the wayside usually. Usually water and sanitary sewer, there's a statutory right to charge the fees to provide those services, whereas the storm sewer, it's not explicitly spelled out in municipal codes the way I understand it. It's definitely something that a lot of people are trending towards. When we had the, what was that thing we had down at Tracks with Chapin Rose and somebody else, I brought that up to him. It was, you know, a lot of smaller communities, this is kind of the next thing on the chopping block, and there's not a way to pay for these things. You know, I recommended they look at the Illinois Municipal Code to try to incorporate that as something else that, you know, within reason, you don't want someone going and gouging people, which most municipal boards aren't, that's not their intention anyways. It's just, hey, if we have a big drainage project, just because you're on top of the hill doesn't mean you're not part of the problem, because you're contributing. So it's not great. There's not a great system for it at this point. If you're home rule, even the home rule places like Champaign, Urbana, the bigger cities, a lot of what they're doing is they're charging what they call a maintenance fee, and it's a much smaller amount that doesn't necessarily, they're a big enough entity that this maintenance fee is big enough that they could probably use it for a capital project here or there, whereas you guys, if you charge this nominal maintenance fee, it's going to be a long time until you do capital projects still. So, you know, if you've got $1 million storm sewer project and you're charging people $1 a month, it's going to be a long time until you get there. So, definitely a Mark question still. Ask him how you can do it, and then he can help me do it other places too. So, it's a great idea. Any other? Well, with that being said, the annual facility inspection report has been submitted to EPA as of 6:05 today, and we've met our requirements by having this meeting. So that's on my calendar for next year, is May 1st. I guess the only other major thing I've got is talking about the water and sewer project. Met with Matt, Rob, and Ryan the other day just to kind of go through a status of where we were at and talk through some things. Keep everybody updated a little bit more in the loop, and now I want to give an abbreviated presentation to you guys just to kind of keep you in the loop. We'll start with the water system. Water system is the capital improvement projects that we're pursuing are largely either water main replacements or water main extensions to promote looping. We talked with Rob, Matt, and Ryan about this the other day and kind of worked on getting the prioritization for these done. The long and the short of it is we've got a handful, like Broadway and Reynolds, left out of it because the intention was we thought that we needed to get those done before we would actually have planning approval and money and all that stuff. So those got put by the wayside, but we did add some other projects in here that we thought were next on the chopping block. Right now the priority set is Borsalita, Clifford, Bourne area right there on the west side of the, or east side of the tracks, north side of the village. All of those are existing 4-inch mains right now, and part of our proposal is to increase those to a 6 or 8-inch main to basically be able to put the appropriate size fire hydrants for fire protection and all the stuff in that area. The next one was distribution system hydrant valve replacement. Matt went through his guys. They identified all the ages of the various hydrants through the town, and we've kind of developed a chopping block of the oldest ones getting replaced. And right now we've got slated for 25 to 30 hydrants and valves being replaced throughout town. I think he was waiting on a little bit more input maybe from the fire chief if there were some that were inoperable that we thought we needed to bump up that list. The third priority is the Woodworth-Austin water main loop. Right now, the end of Woodworth is a dead-end water main. And this one just kind of came up through talking about, you know, are there any other areas? Right now, you guys have 3 water mains that cross the Route 45 and the North-South Railroad. And Matt kind of brought up, he said, you know, some of these appear to be pretty old. You know, if one of them goes down, then we're only down to 1 feet across this major barrier. And what I looked at is we have 3 across the north-south barrier of Route 45 and the railroad, and then we have 2 across the east-west barrier, both on the west or east side of town right now. This kind of seemed like a good opportunity to loop a main and provide a third crossing of the north-south barrier. And by doing so, you'll have both north-south and east-west will have 3 feeds at all times. So if one goes down, you still got a feed and a backup feed feeding those other parts of town. And rather than trying to replace one of these mains that's 6 years old that there haven't been necessarily an inherent problem with yet, it made more sense to put a new one in to promote looping and have this extra redundancy built in. The next one was the James Street water main replacement. There's just a small stretch, I think a 400-foot stretch, that currently loops your guys' water main system with what it shows as a 1-inch line on the maps. I think Matt found some old documentation from DJ Stewart where they put a new hydrant in. Can't remember what that street is on the south end. We got a map, I guess I can look. Vine Street. At Vine Street and James, they put a new hydrant in. And he put their 6-inch line to the corner, but then from the corner of Vine up to the intersection of Walnut is supposedly, based on old maps, looped with a 1-inch or 1.5-inch line. So the intention is to get that out of there and put a 6-inch line to loop the 2 6-inch mains together. And then the last one is the Meadow Lane water main loop. Matt's had some complaints from the Oaks when the school's out that their water quality is down. It appears to be good on the community side, but potentially on their side, they need to do some flushing and stuff. We just basically discussed possibly looping the main from Meadow Lane back up to the backside of the Oaks, who are kind of discussing this additional development, and just kind of have that in the works if and when that development comes. It'd be a good time to maybe have a second feed into the Oaks and promote looping of the Oaks, Meadow Lane, and the school. So if any one of those are out of commission for any time, you got a second feed kind of circulating the water. And that's all the projects for the water that we've got in place. The project plans are good for 5 years. The idea is to kind of put it in, submit it, and say these are our priorities and projects. And then if funding comes through, once they give us planning approval, we come down to the decision time to, hey, do we want to design all this and build all this at once, or does it make sense to do 1 through 3 as one project, and then 2 and 4 and 5 could be done later if, like, the Oaks develops, or, James Street is kind of, it's really a money thing at that point. Right now, we're estimating all of those projects to cost a little over $1.2 million. The impacts, if you didn't have any water revenue, which you guys just implemented the 10% based on the water and sewer rate study, which if you looked at the revenue and expenses over the past 5 years, you guys are operating in the red about $50,000 every year. So with that 10% increase, it puts you basically about even with everything. So assuming we get planning approval later this year, the next year you guys look at another rate increase possibly, that should be enough to cover your loan payment for all of this stuff. You guys did unfortunately drop out of the principal forgiveness category on the water side. It also got reduced pretty drastically. It went from 60% or 800,000 down to 50% or 400,000. The difference to you guys really just high level is if we're paying for all these capital improvements through a single rate increase, without the principal forgiveness and for the 1.2 million over a 20-year life of the current loan terms, it would be an increase of about $4.50 per month to users, which I think is about right in line with another 10% jump from where you guys just were. So essentially, if planning approval comes through later this year, early next year, and you guys have a rate increase next summer and you wanted to do all of this, you probably could and cover it with just that single rate increase.
That was the increase we were supposed to do this year, right, that we cut down?
Well, no, we cut it down, but we did raise up.
We were supposed to do 20% this year.
We were supposed to do 20, but we did 10 and
17
in sewer. So
right.
We didn't quite do it as high as the rate study said to do, but we did enough to get us in the black.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and ultimately, like the water and sewer rate study, that takes into account projects further down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is, in my head, is okay, if you do a 10% next year and get to the point that you're covering your capital expenses from this, well, if you do another 10% the year after that, that's going to start building you reserves for 5 years down the line, or you don't. You know, you kind of evaluate as you go and you say, okay, we did that rate increase, that's covering our loan payment for the next 20 years on this, and at 5 years, you may reevaluate that. And it may be that it makes sense to do the 10, 10, and 10. I think, I can't remember what the exact recommendation was in the water and sewer rate study. It may make sense to put those in place ahead of time and build your reserves. And then in that event, if you build a reserve fund, say you got $1 million in water, and then in 5 years you got five more projects you want to do, you can just pay for it. You don't have to pursue financing. You don't have to pay for the studies. You just go right into it. Basically makes you self-sufficient. That's the idea. If for some reason, and you know, IEPA has to evaluate all this, but if for some reason you guys actually fell into the principal forgiveness, instead of $4.50 per month, it'd be about $3 per month on average for the users. So not a major change either way, but you know, every dollar counts. So if that were to come through, that'd be great. We're gonna submit everything, but based on the data I've seen so far, I think last year the thing that was keeping you guys in it was your unemployment rate was like 4.2%, the state's was 4.0%, and that was the little nugget that kept you guys in the principal forgiveness. And right now, what I just saw, what Gary Bayenheimer with IEPA sent to me, you guys are 3.8%, the state's still 4%. So now you guys just dipped right out of that. But it's not to say that you have to get planning approval. My understanding is once you get planning approval, if the next year the terms are more favorable and you don't build it in the year, like next year, say you said, we're not going to design and build this yet. But once you get planning approval, if you say we're going to wait a year to actually start building this stuff, the next year might be better. Maybe you jump back up into that. Or maybe you don't. But you'll have to kind of evaluate that as that time comes. But our plan right now for the water, the other part of this one is we're updating your water maps, which we're almost 100% done with field work for that stuff. We've got to then create the maps, send those over to Matt, and kind of go back and forth to troubleshoot to kind of get that as good as we can. Ultimately, the map, in my mind, if you get to be about 90% right, you're in a really good standing. And then that's kind of just a maintenance thing year to year. If someone goes out and they find a valve that was buried, we can add that to the map whenever you want. If someone goes out and finds something else crazy, a 2-inch line that's looped somewhere that nobody knew about, you know, we can add that stuff later. But, you know, by and far, we're limited to what we can see on the ground and what the existing maps have. So my goal is to kind of get your map to 90%. And then once it's 90% every year, you just make it a little bit better. You know, just kind of, if you do a project, you track that project and update your map at the end of the year. But plan would be to get this submitted by the end of the month, is right now our plan, which would include the new map and everything else, which is why Rob talked about the authorization for signature on that stuff. Any questions on the water system?
No.
All right.
We did get the ISO report from the police or the fire chief the other day. Doesn't really have as much information as we were hoping for, but we'll just kind of monitor that. If something comes in, whenever the new one comes in, we can kind of look at it and see if there's any other useful information out of it. Which I was supposed to bring that back down and give to him today. I'll have to make another trip. That's all right. I'm back down here.
Did you have a chance to look at the place on
I did downtown? It, and I remembered that when I pulled up tonight, and I was like, that's where he's talking about, right down here.
Yeah, right in front of Loose Cobra.
Yeah.
We just need to extend that sidewalk is all we need to do. I think that'll take care of a bunch of his problems.
You have a lot going on after me today in your meeting. I mean, I can just stick around and look at it if you want.
If you want to.
Okay.
I mean, I know you like take trips down here.
Yeah. Down here a lot.
Seems like it.
We'll move on to the wastewater system update. So the big things on the wastewater stuff we're planning on applying for, the Rebuild Illinois grant for the wastewater treatment plant and the Southside Sanitary Sewer Extension. The treatment plant, you know, through all of our studies and things that we found to date, is we've got a lot of capital improvement needs out of there. There's some capacity concerns with trying to add additional developments that, you know, we've kind of heard about down here. And it's getting to the point where EPA, if you go to tie another system, do another sewer extension, they're going to ask the question of, do you have the wastewater treatment plant capacity? And my answer would be probably not. They have certain criteria they follow. They are going to be subject to whatever ERH's daily monitoring reports tell them, which I don't know that their flow meters are exactly accurate based on what our flow data was. So they may perceive it as okay, but it probably is not capacity-wise. And condition-wise, you guys, your plant was built in the 70s, updated in 84, and then there was a minor update in 2011. Essentially, what we came up with during our capital improvement plan for the plant was the stuff you've got out there right now, it's not probably worth major reuse of what's there. It makes more sense to construct new treatment processes adjacent to it so that one can stay in place while you're doing it. And then the portions that are reusable, reusing them. There's a couple buildings out there, a chemical room, a filter building, that are highly unused right now. And the intent would be to kind of flip those buildings into becoming your operations room and motor control center, and then the other one being a chemical storage building, blower building, and mechanical building. The existing little, where the electrical and plant controls are right now, the plan would be to abandon that once everything else is up and running and operational. Right now, it's a pretty low grade there. If you're ever out there and seeing, you're going to see that building sits lower than just about everything else out there. The top of the building pretty much is in line with the top of your treatment plant tanks right now. And then your filter building and your chemical building are both probably 7 or 8 feet higher than that. Our thought was, let all that run while you get the new stuff built. Once you're ready to switch over, fill that in, regrade it so that you have a more consistent grade over there for driving and getting around there. I don't know if he had a couple copies of this, and I've got another copy of this, but just high level, and I'm not going to say you're all going to be able to see this, but essentially the idea is this is your existing plant, and your new plant processes would be built to the east and then slightly to the north. This is just a slightly outside of your fence line here right now. But you guys own all that property, so it should be fine. This way, you have the ability to keep everything else operational while you're building this, which is one of the biggest challenges, is trying to keep things operational and retrofit things. The stuff we brought previously for the capital improvement plan, that's kind of what I would consider like your 30,000 level view. We're looking at it. These don't work. Here are ones that work. These are costs. This is now for about a 10,000 foot level view. We've actually looked at a little bit more. How would we actually implement these systems? How would they actually fit on the site? How would we retrofit these things in here? So basically, that's kind of the gist of it. The treatment plant, I won't go into a ton of detail on it, but for the most part, other than the two buildings that we plan on reusing, we're gonna reuse the existing excess flow pond, the sludge pond, an existing tank that you guys have out there right now. We're going to convert that to just like a sludge digestion area that will break down your sludge better and then transfer that over to the pond. But the highlight, or probably the highlights of that, this is price, that's what people care about. Right now, our current estimate with the oxidation ditch treatment plant and the retrofitting of all this stuff is we're at $9.2 million for everything. That includes a $730,000 contingency that I pay once you put in there. We want to put it in there too, because until you actually have design, we don't want to plan for less and have more. We also included things like chlorination and dechlorination on this. Right now, you guys have a chlorine exemption. You don't have to disinfect as it's going to the creek, but a lot of those are going away nowadays. We don't want to exclude it from our plan in the event that when we go through permitting, IEPA says, well, now you got to do that. And if it's not your planning approval, and that's a, I think I was like, $150,000 for the tankage and the treat or the chemical stuff. And then there was probably another $50,000 or $100,000 in mods inside buildings to make that work. But if that's not in your plan, now you guys are footing the bill for that, and it's not covered under your principal forgiveness and your loan for the. So we've been a little bit conservative in some of this stuff, but it's things like that that we wanted to make sure we looked at. Right, you know, we could move forward and say, well, there's not a chlorine exemption now. What if there's not one then, and that saves us money? Ultimately, if it's in the planning approval, it doesn't mean we can't cut it out. It just means that we're at least planning for it in the event that it is required. So the impacts from that, if you look at it right now, you guys qualify for 15% principal forgiveness through IEPA, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. That is based on your community size. So the 9.2 million, you have a little bit under 1.6 million of principal forgiveness, which means you'd be financing about 7.6 million on that. The loan rates right now, we would forecast that over a 30-year life cycle. Ultimately, what that boils down to per resident based on the current user base and where we're at, and assuming that you guys are even on your sanitary sewer fund, it'd be a $20 increase to residents to pay for all of that, which would be, you know, about a 60% increase from where you're at right now. The idea with the water and sewer rate study is try to implement these more like 10% increases over the next couple of years to try to build to that, so you're not hitting the 60% in a single year. And all of this will be subject to change. You know, ultimately when we get planning approval, once we get that, we talk about it, say, hey, are we ready to move forward? You've got design, and then until your final bid numbers come in, there's not a loan closing. So once the final bid numbers come in, if it came in at $8.5 million, you would, all of this would be a function of whatever that actual final cost is.
Quick question.
Yep.
So I understand the whole loan forgiveness amount of 15%.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not up front, correct?
So how that works is it's called principal forgiveness. So when you do the loan closing happens after you've actually bid out the construction portion of the work. As long as it's in your planning approval, so all of our design costs and everything like that are eligible for this 15%. Principal forgiveness. You may have to foot the bill as we get there, but then once we get there, all of that is qualified for reimbursement for the design stuff. On the construction side, because essentially they're not going to close a loan with you until they know the final construction number. Once they have that number, they've got the design costs, they've got the anticipated construction costs, they're going to say, hey, we're going to write you, you know, our loan is going to be based on this amount, because the construction cost is usually what's dictating. It's the big one. So once they get that, they're going to say, okay, total cost of everything is $9 million. Based on this number, you know, principal forgiveness of 1.5% or 15%, you know, your loan will be financed over 30 years based on X amount. So essentially the principal forgiveness does come off the top, because your loan is only going to be financed based on what is remaining. Good.
And that's not taking into account if we add new users like the trailer park and the school and stuff like that.
Yeah, any new developments is going to diminish the impact to your user rates, because now you're sharing it over a larger rate base. So right now you guys have about 1,300 users. I think the trailer park would be the equivalent of about 200, so a little less than 20%. So if you did say you had to get to this 60% over the next couple years or whatever, well, that may reduce that down to more like a 45% or something impact. So that's where that's at. And we don't have that taken into account because ideally you want to just be as conservative as you can in your planning approach so that if anything you're cutting, you're not adding. You don't want to get to the end game and be like, well, guys, this is actually $20 million and we've been really good about doing these 10 or 15% increases, but now we got to still do the big jump. So our idea, our plan is to be conservative with our approach so that it covers what you guys need. Any other questions about the treatment? And likely at some point I'll probably bring Joe Pasula with me down here. He's the one that's been very involved with this stuff. Joe has got 40 years experience with IEPA loans and treatment plants and civil and municipal engineering. He's been very helpful in creating all this stuff and very informative. I would plan on once we kind of get this thing finalized to have a little, maybe a special meeting, another special water and sewer meeting similar to what we did the rate study before, and just spend an hour just kind of really giving a little bit more detail on all of this stuff.
Is that plant designed for large increases in population? Say new.
So right now you got it.
Subdivisions.
Yeah, we have. And it's probably more so than what would, you know, typically, like if we just looked at census data and said, oh, you guys are projecting at 0.25% per year, we're beyond that because we've kind of taken some more insight from people here about, you know, there's potential development here and here and here. The Oaks is one of them. The idea is right now we are designed for a population of like 5,100. You guys are about 3,400 now. And it's a 20-year life cycle, so the question is, you know, in 20 years, are you going to grow to that? You know, additions of like a Philo or Posotum, if they ever had an interest in looking at this, you know, it would probably, depending on how development happened here, you'd probably have to do some additional upgrades for that. And in my mind, you look at these things like, okay, is Philo really going to come here in 20 years? Maybe, but probably not. You know, there's not been a lot of legwork on that to date. It's kind of been just people talking a little bit. And until they really strap down and said we want to do this, there's no point in you guys over-designing. If development halted in Tolono and you built this big plant and then Philo wanted to come in, you just kind of have to evaluate that at the time. It's not necessarily designed to take in Philo. It's designed to be expandable for Philo or a Posotum, someone like that, if they wanted to come in. Right now, this is really just incorporating development adjacent to the existing corporate limits. So I think the areas we included in trying to project for that was the little parcel by the East Side Park. I think there's been discussions of that, possibly expanding the southeast quadrant over there. I know there's, I can't remember what they were called now, but there's three or four streets down there, possibly expanding further to that field at some point. Expansion of the Woodworth property has been a discussion on the west side of town. And then like the Oaks in that southern area as well. So all of that has kind of been accounted for in this at this point. If none of that happened and Philo wanted to come in, you may be able to do that still, but it would limit your local future expansion. I think other things that we discussed, I think that's probably part of the next part, so I'll wait. And this would all be, I mean, essentially the benefits of, you know, obviously you guys have 30 and 40 year old mechanical and electrical systems out there that are antiquated and not user friendly, and all the things we have nowadays, everything that you would have out there would be much more user friendly, much more usable. You know, people, operators, whoever you had, would probably have access via their phones or tablets or whatever. So if they needed to check, oh, what's our levels in this tank, or what's our concentration levels of chlorine, do we need to adjust that? A lot of that is going to be now at your fingertips with the new plant versus what you have now.
We'll get rid of all the copper lines going to all of the lift stations.
That's going to be part of our next one, that's why I didn't say it.
Oh, sorry. That's what I want to get rid
but
of.
But yes, ideally, the idea would be is all your lift stations, you guys have six or seven lift stations, they, part of the next project we'll talk about, is they'll be incorporated that basically everything's coming back to a central hub at the plant, and then that's pushing out data that everybody has needed from there. So now you're going to be able, depending on what all you want to know, you're going to be able to know if you have a pump clog on something immediately. It's not going to be a guy that has to go physically look at this every day and record hours. It's just going to tell you, it's going to give you an alert, hey, this pump's running at half speed, so what's going on here? Which ultimately will help you prevent backups before they happen. The pump station goes down and someone gets it in their basement, you're going to hear about it real bad. So, I don't know if you guys dealt with that.
A couple times. Yeah, on Whitehead Walnut, south or north of there.
Okay, yeah.
Actually twice, but they caught it before it did it the last time.
Good.
So that's the one where we want to put the old chopper pumps or whatever.
Yeah, and we don't really know why it's backing up right now.
Right.
I think our camera, when we do our camera stuff, hopefully it sees something.
Yep. Yeah, I mean that's the big thing with investigations is you may stumble across things.
Luckily, the last time it was just 3 or 4 weeks ago, they smelled it just like it started to smell last time, so they called Saturday. It was Saturday, I think. Matt came in. And
yeah, it's a pain. I mean, happened at my house twice, but it's internal plumbing, so it's my problem. Unfortunately. Is there any other questions regarding the treatment plant itself? You know, right now we're talking about utilizing some of that space that's up there by the ponds as part of this. We would end up putting new fencing and rerouting that path to get outside of there as well as part of this.
What's the mill?
Nothing else? Alright, the second project was lift station upgrades. You know, through looking at E Street, we knew E Street was obviously a major concern. You open the lid, everything's getting ready to fall in on itself. The second two most priority concerns in my mind were your Elizabeth Street lift station and your Watson Street lift station. Elizabeth Street pretty much pumps the entire east side of town. Watson Street pretty much pumps the entire west side of town. So those are both pretty critical pump stations. Both of them are pretty old. They're can-type lift stations, which nowadays a lot of people are going to a submersible lift station where you don't have to put a man down in the hole to look at the pumps and the electricals and all this stuff. A lot of that stuff is being moved above ground and leave the pumps down in the hole. So both of those, and they're your only two can stations you guys have outside of, well, anywhere else really in all of town. Everything else is submersible. But right now, you know, safety-wise, it's not ideal. It's confined space entry, and technically, what should be happening is when everybody goes in that hole, there should be three people, there should be a tripod, there should be all of this stuff, but I know that's not happening now. As far as I know, I believe ERH does daily checks where they go down and read hour meters in these pits. You know, it's definitely a concern in my mind. I know Elizabeth Street is also, they've expressed some issues with maybe some pump clogging as well. And that's taking the larger portion of flow. It's a little bit more than what the west side is. So that was another reason that one made sense to kind of look at, you know, what can we do to improve this as well while we do this. And then the third one, and this came up as we were starting to kind of scope out this exact plan, was the Condit Street lift station, the Deer Path lift station that Ryan's talking about. Having clogging with the pumps and fails there, that's causing these backups. And we've got built into this plan now to upgrade the pumps in that station to chopper pumps, which can pretty much handle anything you throw at them. They put them in prisons. And then probably do a few other minor upgrades to that lift station while we're there. It's, you know, it's one of your newer lift stations, but mechanically, electrically, it's still, you know, 20 years old in that sense. Some of the mechanical stuff is, you know, it's kind of starting to age. The electric stuff doesn't look that bad, but it's probably gonna be more that we're gonna use what's there and probably retrofit what's there to work with what we're gonna put in the plan. Three lift stations.
The electric noise is pretty good.
The cost for them total is about just under $1 million. The Elizabeth one is the largest, which that one, space confinements is a big issue because right now it's built literally like 2 or 3 feet off your road, which is not ideal for things like that. If anybody ever runs off the road and takes it out, it could be bad news trying to access that thing and actually get it to function. A lot of these things, typically you're gonna see them built with bollards or fences around them or out away from places so that they don't have people around them. The East Street lift station, you know, it's at a park, there's not a ton we can do. It's off the side of the road too, but as part of the new construction, we're gonna put bollards along the edge of the road for any traffic from driving over these lift stations and damaging the control panels and other things of that nature.
Oh, you said that. It's only gonna happen tonight.
You'll be all right. You're on the east side of town?
No, I'll be okay then.
Okay. So anyways, for the three lift stations, Elizabeth was $517,000 estimate, Watson Street was $339,000, and Deer Path was $133,000. Deer Path being the conduit street, because we're really just, we're not touching the structures or more or less pulling the guts out, replacing the guts of this station. With that though, the chopper pumps are extremely expensive. I mean, they're the bulk of that cost that we budgeted right now. And Elizabeth Street, you know, we've kind of budgeted as if we need to purchase a property to do that. Right now it's at the northwest corner of Marshall and Elizabeth. We've scoped it as if we had to purchase the property at the northeast corner because we want to include that in the plan as kind of the worst case scenario if we had to actually do that. The hope would be that through design we could identify something that worked better where maybe we're just getting an easement or we're buying a swatch of his land and cutting his lot down, things like that. We did include basically a purchase price of that entire property in the event that we had to. Not necessarily what we would want to do, but for the planning, again, it's easier to cut out than it is to add later. So we budgeted for that. You know, realistically, if that goes away, your $517,000 estimate on that station goes down to $400,000, which for your guys' purposes, East Street lift station is a smaller lift station. With design and construction oversight, I think it's just over $300,000 for that one. So the Elizabeth Street and the Watson are going to be a little bit more expensive because they're just a little bit bigger stations. The pumps and electrical stuff all cost a little bit more money.
Is there any word on when they're going to start?
East Street. I just got that today. All of the submittal approvals and everything are done at this point. And I've been kind of harping on him to say, hey, when are you getting out here starting this? Where are you going to? Well, the pumps and electrical stuff, the submittals were delayed 6 weeks because of COVID, which we just got those probably 2 weeks ago. Got them back to them last week. Everything's good to go. They've got them on order, but stuff's not coming in until, I believe he had a start date of August 1st. You know, ideally we were looking to be started by the end of this month. Some of that's COVID, some of that's, I'm not sure if it's COVID or not, but he sent me his preliminary construction schedule today. I haven't even had a chance to review it yet, not in detail, but I looked at it and it looks like everything's still, even though they're starting a little later, they still have it slated to be completed at the time of completion, which basically I think what we had on that was substantial completion, which means everything's operational and done other than prettying up the site and replanting grass and stuff like that by the end of this year. And then if it has to sit over winter to let the soil settle and stuff, they would be back in the spring to reseed. And I'll share that with you guys. I just want to look at it and make sure everything's good on it before I forward that on to you guys. Are there any questions on the lift stations? You got three lift stations that we would be doing as part of what I would call phase two of the wastewater system improvements. And it would address replacement of your two largest municipal lift stations outside of the treatment plant. Nothing? All right. So Project C, the Southside Sanitary Extension. This kind of came up, I think, about 2 years ago now when the Oaks was interested in trying to get on your guys' sanitary sewer system. We did kind of a little preliminary analysis for you guys, just trying to determine, was it feasible, you know, how would we do this? And, you know, basically, you know, said, okay, the Oaks is priority one, you know, we need to serve them as part of this because they're going to be the biggest user, but what else is in that area? Meadow Lane is still within corporate limits and unserved by sewers, and then Unity West is outside of corporate limits, but it's in the area and can definitely be served by that. I know, I think what I've heard is, you know, back when that was built, people, you know, when they built it, they thought that they would be tying on the sewer and realized, oh, there's nothing out here. So those would be kind of the ideal limits. And when we looked at that, we looked at the existing lay of the land, the best, look, there's no way to just serve it all by gravity. The existing grades at the plant don't work with that, so at some point you're going to have a lift station. And when we look at that, then you start looking at a little bit more of a regional plan and say, okay, yeah, we can put a lift station right outside of the Oaks and pump here, but if we do that, what is, how is that going to serve any future expansion in that area? So we basically sited the lift station at the south end of Bourne Street in 600. That was kind of the low point of the area, that then you would gravity across Route 45 and the railroad tracks to all that development, and that would all gravity back. You could actually extend sewers a little bit further north and a little bit further west than the edge of Meadow Lane and the school. And then at that point, it kind of dips into a different drainage basin, and anything beyond that is kind of flowing away from there. You basically have to balance what you want to do. Right now, we're set with this lift station. It's probably 25 foot deep. The sewer coming out of it's 17 foot deep. You start getting over 20 feet on a sewer, the prices start to go way up for construction. So that's kind of like a rule of thumb to kind of try to keep it at or below 20 feet of depth, because 0 to 8 feet makes a lot difference than 8 to 16 feet, and then 20 feet up is, they have to start stacking boxes or making big wide, like 20 foot wide excavations so they can stair step it down to build these things. With that being said, the lift station, everything was drained by gravity over the lift station on the east side, which then allows everything that's existing on the west side to be served by gravity. And if there were ever development on the east side of this stuff, you could put gravity sewers to this lift station and serve with this lift station. If you wanted to service anything further west, much further west than Meadow Lane, you would end up putting new sewers and a new lift station there for that drainage basin. Same thing, anything further north of the Oaks. You know, Rob expressed, you know, like Woodworth Drive, that would be a very great place to do this with, but how this is set up, Woodworth Drive is in a separate drainage basin from this, and it's got, you guys have a sewer directly across from Woodworth, that would probably make more sense to try to get to that location rather than this one. If you wanted to get up to Woodworth Drive, you'd probably be closer to these 30 or 35 foot deep sewers down at the lift station that you'd have to construct back. But as is right now, essentially we've got it set up where kind of the phase one of that would be extending gravity sewer from the Oaks, from the end of Meadow Lane, back over to this lift station, and setting this lift station at the corner of 600 and Bourne Street and pumping that up to the wastewater treatment plant. Everything north of 600 there drains back to 600, so if there ever were anything that wanted to be happening there, you can gravity drain back to that lift station still. The anticipated cost for this came in a little over $2 million. It's quite a bit of gravity sewer and pump station and force main add up. Basically, we're at 2.17 for that expansion. You know, some of the discussion is, you know, exactly how does that get paid for at some point? You know, is there going to be a special service area for that extension where people that are getting the sewer extension are going to pay some kind of capital fee for a term to have that? We're ways off from that. You know, this is a big thing for the Oaks. Right now, there are 126 units. They'd like to expand to 200 is what they've said. And right now their septic system is in the field that they want to expand to, that they own property. So they're probably not expanding until that happens, but they've got some other internal issues with their existing collection and treatment system on their site. So I think they would be very interested in that. That project is with the water wastewater treatment plant as of now to be submitted for the Rebuild Illinois grant. Between those two, you're looking at an $11 million total investment, with the lift stations, $12 million. The implications of this one to like your user rates for the Southside Sanitary Sewer Extension, if you were in the black on everything else, would be a little less than $5 a month per user. And that's with your 15% principal forgiveness. I didn't talk about the lift stations, but I'll just jump back to that real quick and say that's about $1 per user for the three lift station, or $1 per lift station per user, so $3 per user to do all the lift stations over the same. And that the lift stations is on a 20-year term, just because mechanical parts wear out a little bit more than like a gravity sewer or wastewater treatment plant. So, again, you know, you guys have already started taking steps on your sanitary sewer fee. You raised 17% this year. You know, general numbers is you'd be looking at an investment of additional $30 per user per month to do all of this stuff. And that's kind of in the worst case scenario. You know, you don't get grant money from Rebuild Illinois, and it all hits at once. You'd be looking at doing that in a single bound. But with the fact that you guys raised your rate 17% this year, I think that's getting you back in the black on your sewer side. So other increases over the next few years should be able to compensate and cover all of these expenditures. But that'll have to be evaluated on a year-by-year basis, because if you don't get the grant and then we say, well, let's get the wastewater treatment plant done now and then worry about the lift stations in 3 years or 4 years and worry about the sanitary sewer extension if and when the Oaks says, hey, we were ready to develop if you guys put this out there. So again, this will be kind of prioritized in the same way as like the water system was, where the wastewater treatment plant is number one still in my mind. And then I don't know if you guys said whether the lift station or Southside Sanitary Sewer Extension would be two or three on that. I guess it may depend on, you know, some input from like the Oaks or the school down there, and if they're willing to kind of kick in some money as a like a large user fee tap or something, it may make more sense. But that's just me. I think your treatment plant's number one. Get it updated and ready for any expansion that does want to happen, and then the other two you kind of address if and when needed. If the Rebuild Only grant comes through, you're in a very good position. That's going to save you about 50% on all of this stuff. The intention is to request $5 million for these improvements.
That's a lot of stuff to digest.
No pun intended.
Well, I fell asleep on Facebook at this point.
So. I know, right?
You weren't near as excited as Joe was talking about.
Joe is always very excited.
Joe always uses everybody's names, too. Hey, Tim, so. Like, it just keeps you engaged, though, because you're like, when you doze off, he yells at your name. You're like,
I just wonder if he did that to, like, just remember, like, as a practice, remember people's names.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of times I go into, like, a new meeting, and I'm like, I need to really focus on getting this information out there, and then I'm like, who's
that? Yeah. On
definitely
that.
A lot to digest.
On that grant, are you getting everything in
on
that last
that
email?
The only thing they've told me that I need still is the annexation, and I haven't heard anything about it. So.
Which is in Mark's, right? It's Mark's to do.
I think. Did you talk to Mark when you called him?
I never got a hold of him.
Okay.
So.
He was, last time I knew, he was digging through his stuff, because he's like, it should already be annexed in. So, I'm wondering.
According to the county's.
Did not get filed like some other stuff didn't get filed.
According to county, it's still not annexed.
Trust it. But we own it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and on that stuff, you know, I've still got a lot of stuff to do on that still. I mean, we've kind of got to a point where our cost estimates are fine-tuned, and that's like the big driving thing for my end for them. I've got a project summary pretty much put together. I've just got to incorporate the final cost estimates that we've got.
So what's that mean if he finds out it is not annexed in?
In my my mind, if you guys have property, if you guys have the deeds to the properties,
yeah, we own it. We know we own it.
But do we have the deed?
I'd have to go to the bank and make an appointment, go to the bank and search for safe deposit boxes.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. If I had to do this, I would just have a title company go down to the courthouse and pull the deeds for those two properties, whatever the current deed is, and it should be your guy's name. But if you have it at the bank, that's just as easy. And in my mind, whether it's annexed or not, shouldn't matter. If you own the property, you have the right to do the work on that property that you own. So,
should we make an appointment so we can get that?
Well, Brandy can make the appointment and get into it. I don't think they want all of us to go in there. All three of us go dig through the box. There's a lot of junk in the boxes too.
Oh, totally admit. How many boxes do we have?
We have two. One's pretty full and the other one doesn't have a lot in it. That was something Wade was working on too, is going through and finding out properties that needed annexed, what wasn't. Kind of planning, like the planning board's supposed to do.
The other thing I was going to talk to you guys about, I forgot to bring this up yesterday in our meeting, but there's some potential to get more points on this grant program, I think, if we excluded the Southside Sanitary Sewer Extension, because it's going to require probably some easements and like the railroad. We've got paperwork that says, like from the railroad, says, yeah, if you meet all of our criteria, we'll give you a permit to do this. But that's like one of their scoring things, is if you don't own all the property or have all the easements, you get like dinged on points on that. And like the Southside Sanitary Extension, you know, obviously we don't have all the easements along there. It'd be different if it was your guys right away along the whole way, or we said, well, we'll just put it down the middle of the road and be done with it. But all that's either Pasotum Township, Tolono Township. And in my mind, the max you can ask for is $5 million, and your treatment plan's well above that already. You may be better suited to just do that and get more points.
Because we'll basically have to pay for the rest of it anyways.
Right. And ultimately, like your letters of support, anybody and everybody that's not on the sewer or on this, like the Nevermans was a question, you know, pretty much if expansion is going to happen here or new development, the treatment plant's going to have to be addressed. So whether that's the Woodworth Road people saying, hey, we really want sewer, or the Oaks, I mean, if the Oaks is going to tie on, you have to do the plant before you can tie more capacity onto your plant now. It's not to say that that wouldn't, like, your first development couldn't get there, but one or, you know, after one development, EPA may be raising some questions. So you still have all your letters of support in place for that. It's just a matter of...
It's probably not a bad idea, since the south side's kind of a want, not a need.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what your guys' thoughts are on that. I think
mean, if it gets us more points, I would be for it. Cause
yeah, I would be too.
It's not like it's...
Yeah, you're still going to be maxed out either way. The nice thing, with if you got the rebuild and you didn't include the Southside Sanitary Extension, you wouldn't be obligated to do both immediately. If you get the rebuild and you say you're doing both, they're going to expect you to build both. So that's just the thought that kind of came up, because Rita kept bringing up the questions of, do we have all of our permits? Well, of course, we haven't designed
it. I would be fine taking it out too, because then that gives us some time to decide if we want to do like a special tapping fee, or like what you said, a special
service area. And I know other places have done that.
To get it paid for.
You definitely have to kind of get with Mark on that and discuss that. And someone like the Oaks, maybe they've got money in the bank and say, hey, we want you guys to kick in 20% of this project, or whatever that number may be. Maybe they just write a check and say, here's our tap fee. And then other people, you know, like a residence or someone, well, I don't have $5,000 sitting around. You just put it on their bill for the next 5 years or something, 10 years, whatever it comes out to be. But make it, do it the way that everybody can afford to do it and chip in without crippling them.
And that gives us some negotiation too, because if we have it on this grant and we have to do it and the Oaks find out, then if it was me, I'd be like, no, I'm not chipping in. You have to do it already anyway, so.
Yeah, I'm fine dropping that extension for now.
And I think that's kind of the big thing with that, is just we've got an RIP planning approval, so if and when it ever came to fruition, you'd still have 15% principal forgiveness on it.
The only problem is that's going to hurt us on the grant is because we were using the Oaks for low-income housing. Because that's part of that grant is you had to have so much low-income housing, you had to have something else in there.
I don't think it's going to impact covering. You because the Oaks wanting to be there doesn't change whether the sewer's there or not. They want to be there. The treatment plant has to be done first regardless. So if they
then, I know, but that grant,
right?
You had to have so much low-income, it had to provide for low-income housing.
But where is that in the application?
It's in the grant. That's one of the things that Rita brought up.
Okay.
Is how much low-income housing is this going to affect? And
we should just kind of have a chat with Rita about that.
Well, and is there other areas like Marigold or Magnolia, whatever? Marigold,
Ever April.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other ones. It was just like we were using, leveraging that a little bit, and plus, as that's adding on. I mean, that's a big chunk that we were adding on to low-income housing and stuff.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't know that you couldn't still use it because the sewer extension can't happen until the treatment plant.
That's true. That's a good point.
I mean, if they say, hey, we want to be on your system, you say our system's not big enough. You know, we got to make our system bigger. Do you support us? You know, are you part of, you know, the reason that we would do this, which they would be because they're included in our project plan as, you know, a development, existing development,
true,
as well as a future development.
So it still works both
ways. I think you could argue that point that whether the sanitary sewer is built immediately or not,
they're within the corporate limits.
Yeah. And we have proof we're working, you know, we're looking at doing this too. So.
Right. You know, basically that the Southside Sanitary Sewer Extension was brought up and the answer was, hey, we can do this and this is the cost for this, but we can't do that at all until we do this. So this is step one, which serves the entire community. And then step two is then serve that south end. We can look at it, but that's something that kind of I started thinking about as I was trying to revise my scoring estimates and looking at, you know, do we have all these easements, do we have all these permits? And they specifically ask about like the railroad because that they know it's a headache, we know it's a headache. That would expunge some of those things that would possibly boost our score up a little bit higher.
Well, on Tuesday at 6 o'clock, as long as 6 o'clock works for everybody, we're gonna have a special meeting to pass those three resolutions too.
Which day?
Tuesday, a week from today at 6.
And my thought was when we submit this, we would probably submit our report is like an appendix to the application. Hey, if you guys want to read 200 pages of it, here it is. Just show that the Southside Sanitary
Sewer. My morning email to
it's just
Mark of all of the things since he's not here that we need to know.
We have to start inviting you back more often. So.
I about fell asleep. I think that's everything. If anybody has any questions or anything I missed other than the loose cobra, what do you all do when I leave here? Safe routes to school supposedly is coming back this fall, but there's zero information on it yet. I did get that from IDOT.
And that grant was a 60-day review period, correct? Does that mean they can be longer than 60 days, or?
They said at 60 days, their intention is to have reviewed everything and scored everything and allocated money. So at 60 days, they should have completed their review, and we should be notified whether we did or did not get anything awarded.
All right, anything else?
Cool.
Any other questions for Tim since we got him here? Perfect.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. The tree grinding stump, that's a budget item. We can put in the budget. There's two different quotes, one for 5 and one for
11.
Okay.
Basically, the higher ones to
do all the cleanup.
Cleanup, the other ones.
But if we're going to budget in getting that burn thing, why don't we just do the cleanup ourselves? We have high school.
Yeah, that's fine.
And then we go with the angle is 55.
I think so.
Yeah, around 5,000. And that's like half price. To
and that's 90, somewhere up to like 90 tree stumps, I think.
Yeah.
106.
And I think, yeah, I don't know how much it costs to rent that tree grinder that we had. But I think it was like $2,500 or something.
What? Over 1,000 for the 5 days we didn't use it?
It was a little bit more than that. I think it was closer to 2, wasn't it? Do you remember that, Bill? So I'm like paying this guy $5,500 to come and do like the night. I mean, we're almost 100 stumps essentially. I think they would give a lot more use out of the whole 4 that we got out of it last time. And,
4?
Well, it wasn't very many. How many was it? Do you remember? Remember how many stumps it was? We got? It doesn't matter.
No, I'm trying to think of a name right now. I can't think of time.
What? I think this is actually a good idea. But it'll be a budgetary item. We'll put it in the budget. And we have several high schoolers that we can stick with this guy that can go around and just follow him around and clean up after him. So. Alright. We gotta renew the contract with Ron Stabler, a water guy.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Who is Ron?
He's the guy that tests our water every year.
Okay.
He signs off on our monthly reports that have to go to.
Don't worry, I've asked Matt that like 5 times since we've been talking about it.
So that contract has $0 listed in it.
Oh shit,
he gets
in it.
$300 a month, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Why
do we have it? We just pay him $300 a month. We'll just keep paying him $300 a month.
Because the EPA has to have this.
Really?
Yeah, they have to. Yeah, they. Matt did tell me that they have to have a written up contract, whether it has money on it or not.
Well, we as a board need to know how much we're paying, and the contract he created does not have a single dollar figure on it.
Is that it right there?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't looked at it. I haven't looked at it.
Send him out on Friday.
I spent all day yesterday in the office dealing with stuff. Still didn't get the board packet cleared. Interesting.
And in this, in the number of visits, item number 4 in this contract, minimum number of visits or hours the contract operator must be on site each week or month.
It says one visit.
Yeah. Which one is that? One visit per week, one visit per month.
So there needs to be some fixing on this.
Here you go.
I got blue.
This is a 5-year agreement?
It is 300, right? There's no place to even plug in, honey, is there?
Pretty sure we can.
We can make
add
something.
A
I'm
number.
Just saying that there's no place on here right now.
Right.
Number 4, we can just put the village will pay contractor $300 a month.
Ah, here we go.
Where it talks about he's
employee.
He's an independent contractor, not.
Do we have him fill out a W-9?
Mm-hmm.
He needs to. Because if we're paying him, we need to be able to prove to the IRS that we are, and he needs to be able to be accountable for it. So I found it interesting in number four on the first page that that as an independent contractor, he's not an employee of the village and is not subject to employee provisions. I don't know how I necessarily feel about that if he's representing the village. I mean, granted, he's doing one thing. But, and I don't know how much contact he actually has with people when he's doing that one thing.
He doesn't. Just the office staff and sometimes Matt.
But we wouldn't make, if we had a meeting.
I'm just thinking, the policies that we have concerning conduct.
But since he's an independent contractor, why would he be covered under our policy manual? Because like I'm saying, Mediacom's an independent contractor that comes in. The stump grinder guy, we're making a contract with him.
They're vendors of a different sort, I would feel.
Oh.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I agree.
Playing back and forth
I don't know.
This makes it super complicated, more complicated than I think it should be.
I think Matt got it straight off of the IEPA website,
oh,
I think.
Oh, water.
Oh, yeah.
Just
so it's actually
contract.
Their contract that they...
You just need to add a visit and a dollar sign. That's it.
That's what I did. I added a number 8 on the first page. It says, if you can read my writing, the village will pay Ronnie Stabler $300 a month for his services. And then I added
4 on page 3, the word month.
Yeah, that's all I did, 1 visit per month. It's the only things I added to the contract.
We have to make a motion on that one? I make a motion to approve the contract with Ron Stabler as corrected.
Need a second?
Second.
Roll call.
Perry?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Stuber?
Yes.
All right, the next 2 things in the board packet is what we'll do the special meeting for, or the next is those things for the grant. We already did vote for fuel tax. Police department, we don't really have anything. We are trying to hire somebody, but nobody really wants to be a police officer right now. Bills.
Make a motion to pay bills.
Need a second?
Second.
Perry?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Stuber?
Yes.
Before you yell at me, is there any extensions in here that I haven't seen?
No.
Okay. All right. Regular session minutes on June 2nd.
Motion to approve regular session minutes from June 2nd, 2020.
Second.
We have to do a roll call because that's what Mark says.
But we're all here.
There's no electronic.
No electronic.
Oh, perfect. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? I will say this, though. I do appreciate not having to make corrections to the minutes every single month. Appreciate that. Employee manual. You had 2 things to add to it, the electronics thing, the thing we passed years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I sent it out last week if you've got. Yeah.
I have some questions. So in the electronic mail section of this ordinance, which is section 2.5, well, chapter 2.51A, purpose and scope. Near the bottom it says, for the purposes of chapter 2.5, which is the entire guidelines for electronic mail, technology, and personal communication devices, the term employees of the village and or employees shall not be deemed to include police officers who are employed by the village police department. They shall instead be regulated by police department procedures adopted and implemented by the village police chief.
Can we change that to their policy?
That doesn't seem right. They are all employees and they should all abide by the same electronic use policy, with the understanding that as police officers, I know that there may be times where their work has to take them outside of the normally acceptable uses for investigation purposes only. But I don't think that we should separate our police employees and how they use email from how we allow everybody else to use email.
If I recall when that was added, whenever we did it last time,
2012,
I think that was because their actual wordage is a lot more strict than ours.
Yeah, because they let people through their policy. They have a whole completely different policy.
And does any of it go under their union contract?
Shouldn't its policy shouldn't fall under union contract, but I know it's more strict
but
than
I
it's
think
been.
That's why that was.
So
wording could be changed, but
to reference the specific police policy, I would prefer that
instead of chief of police.
Yeah, because
I like it referencing the policy. I see where you're going with that. I like it referencing their policy. I don't like the way it's written in here.
And the policy created for the police department, where does that come from?
They use
LexiPol right now. So that's updated 3 times a day. That's what it seemed like.
Yeah,
they're just constantly pumping out
they keep
updates and changes and
with everything.
Okay. Section 2.51C, prohibited use of email. So that first sentence talks about all of the first paragraph talks about all the things that you cannot do, and it says that that any other inappropriate messages on the email system is prohibited and will not be tolerated and may result in discipline. If it's prohibited and not tolerated, let's change that to will so that there's no question about where we stand. And ...252D, system inspection or review. The first paragraph talks about an employee's supervisor has the express authority to inspect or review the system and any and all temporary or permanent files and related electronic systems or devices and any content thereof when such inspection or review is in the ordinary course of his or her supervisor duties or based on cause. I don't like the idea of blanket ability to check people's items, village items that are being used by a person without cause. I think we need to.
Where were you at on this?
252D, system inspection or review, the first paragraph.
This is jumping.
So you just want to cut out in the course of their ordinary supervisor duties and just do based on cause?
Yeah. Yeah, because if you're doing your supervisory duties, you don't have time to be going to inspect other people's stuff. Electronic stuff.
For the most part, I think most of that comes to me, too, if someone needs something that I just need to check out.
Yeah, which is later in this, but, and there was a spot about getting expressed authorization of an employee supervisor later. But yeah, I'd like it to be, you know, for cause instead of just based on their normal supervisory duties. So that last sentence of that, the last portion of that sentence, that is literally one whole sentence. Any content thereof when such inspection or review is based on cause. Have you found it yet?
I think he's not wanting to move. See?
Here. I have it in my hands.
Basically, we just got to rewrite the ordinance and...
Well, he put really nice notes on here. It needs to be updated anyway because it's an old
ordinance.
It's
8 years old.
Yeah.
It calls social media social networking.
BlackBerry still a thing.
PDAs.
Don't feel bad that this is taking probably longer than you expect. It took probably 2 years or more to draft that. I'm not kidding.
I mean, the manual's done. I was just,
every meeting,
as an add-on, I saw that. And I don't think it's necessary that we include job descriptions. I don't think that that's necessary in the employee manual. I mean, if you've got the job, you know what your job is. You don't need other
each
people.
Each person should have a copy of their job description, right. But
I don't think we need that.
Can
and
you put down what you think that should be and then send it to him electronically and just let him rewrite it that way? What you said was,
well, who's
going to
rewrite the ordinance?
We're going to rewrite the ordinance.
Yeah,
you
have to rewrite the ordinance.
Are you going
to
have,
yeah,
write, or Jared can write. Oh, you want to rewrite it? I was going to let Jared rewrite
it. Well, it's just the technology ordinance.
Yeah.
I don't have the
ordinance
files.
Right.
All I have is a copy. I don't have any.
Brandy's our ordinance writer. She's freaking amazing at it. She can write an ordinance like that.
If I was able to change documents, that'd be fine. But I'm a read write only guy there. Brian, so you can change my privileges.
Because you know Brandy's already taking these perfect notes on what it's in there. Save writing.
Oh, and our use while driving policy should really reflect the state law.
Yeah.
Which means no use while driving.
Which the police officers are exempt from.
Understand that.
Their duty.
Yep.
What does it say? You can use it.
I don't know. The forms would be separate.
Like
forms would be separate because that is your tax forms, so that doesn't need to be included in the policy manual. Job descriptions don't need. I don't think the bargaining agreement for the police needs to be employee manual. It's something separate.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be there. Yeah.
The only thing is the computer use technology policy. We can. Just see ordinance.
It's okay to put it in there. I mean, you can just put it in as an appendix. Trust me.
It's something they probably should sign off on when they first start here, and then they'll never look at it again over the course of their entire.
I was going to make it a separate thing, so they have to sign off so they can turn it in instead of in the manual. It doesn't need to be in the manual.
Why not?
Because it's something on top of what they sign.
Right. But
we're trying to shorten the manual, not extend the pages.
It should be printed.
It's so electronic.
No, it's
okay.
Printed. That's why I asked if I need to change the font or theme of it because it's only going to be printed, not electronic.
But we'll have an electronic copy, and that can be put anywhere online.
So that's fine, but I'm just saying as far as this goes, we don't need to include it in here. We just put it as a bullet point.
So you're pointing to print and give everybody a print and employee manual?
Yeah, I already do.
Once you get rid of that, just give them a single sheet of paper saying received an electronic file.
But not everybody has access to email.
All of our employees do.
Not everyone has access to email. There are certain employees that cannot use email.
All of them have access because all of them have access to a computer at the office.
That's not what I'm saying. Not all of
our
employees
know how to use
can
it.
Use the email.
They don't need email. If it's PDF, you can open it on the screen and they can read it.
I know. I like giving it to them and that they sign off on it.
Well,
we do it one time.
That's fine.
And then they have an updated version they can look at.
We're updating it. We've updated the employee manual. We're updating the electronic use policy. It should be together because in the...
I can make it apart. It's fine.
Well, I like that. I like doing the appendixes, like you said.
And
that way it's all together. They can sit down and read it all.
And if they need to walk away with this, and let's say you have a separate, yes, I agree to the electronic use policy, or shoot, that could all just be on one form. I've received my employee manual.
Okay.
And I will agree to abide by the electronic use policy, all on one sign-off sheet, and then they're responsible for everything they carried away.
Sorry. And then a pay table. I don't know what you want.
We have that, but...
I don't think that needs to be in the employee manual, right? No. So I will add computer and technology use policy as part of the employee manual and not appendix. Correct?
No, as an appendix.
Oh, as an appendix.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Just send me the updated.
Good. All right.
Employee performance evaluation. Everybody was fine with that?
I sent you what I thought.
Yeah. Is everybody fine with Jared's thoughts?
We didn't get
Jared's
thoughts.
Oh,
that's
just
a conversation with the entire board.
It was just
simplifying it to needs improvement, meets expectations, and exceeds.
Yeah.
Gets rid of a lot of the satisfactory or unsatisfactory. Or
you got the policy, right?
Mm-hmm. Cool. I like that's fine. Works for me.
Because you're the one that's doing basically the employee evaluations, right?
Supposedly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I started
you are
it.
Doing
I
employee evaluations,
it.
Right?
I got that far.
I mean, it's a pretty simple form. I don't think it's complicated.
I don't think it's the form.
No. The lack of wanting to do it.
Gotta do it.
So I just need the policy. I'll add it. And then you'll get a nice little maroon and white copy of the employee.
All right. Anything on the budget review stuff? Anybody have ideas? I know Jared sent some ideas in.
I want to talk about, believe it or not, sewer and water. So the way I'm reading this, we still have between the both of them, almost a $500,000 shortfall between the both of them.
I hope not.
Well, if we have Well, even go back
yeah,
to.
Yeah, because our expenses for water, $826,999. Our income is
$643,148.
This is one I kind of. Yeah. Well, we've got $220,000 for water main replacement phase 3 and 4.
$400,000 is just for paying for the water.
Just in the water.
So even if you go back to 2019, we're still right on track with what we spent in 2019. And 2020 wasn't as much. So that's telling me our, even without doing these projects, water alone, we're in the hole $183,000.
That's if we do the project that's coming up. Is that on the budget that's proposed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's counting in the Main Street project, right, Brandy?
It's whatever Matt.
Are you looking on water or
so
sewer right
now?
Broadway. I'm sorry, Broadway.
Water replacement phase 3 and 4, right?
We're going to add that number and this number.
$220,000.
So if we took that $220,000 out, we'd actually have $100,000 extra in there.
No. We'd have like $40,000 extra in there.
Because that's, what'd you say that one was?
$220,000.
And you said we had.
We're $183,000 in the hole if we keep it like it is right now. But even if you go back to 2019, we lost probably about the same. No, wait. Yeah. So our actual income in FY 2019 was $507, and our expenses was $761, so that's $200,000. So that's telling me we are still way behind where we need to be.
Oh yeah,
and that's you know, I'm just adding that on that we did, you know, to get that, to get where he is and to get where we need to be. That's just water, sewer. We're almost $400,000 in the hole. We were 2019 was roughly $200,000 in the hole. 2020 we were about $300,000 in the hole.
Another alternative, you know, if you guys really think Broadway and Reynolds can wait a year, you could put it in the project plan, be $40,000 plus this year, and then next year, I mean, you're going to have more than enough money. I think your loan payments, if you did everything through a single IETA loan, is like $70,000 a year. Which the joy in that is it makes it so much easier to do that. It's like buying a house, you know, you can pay for it over 30 years rather than paying for it up front. Which what you've been doing is you've been paying for these water projects, which granted saves you interest and all that stuff, but 2018 you guys did the Austin Strong Quarry area, and then Broadway Reynolds would dip you back into that negative. If you put that as a project plan and put it off and just financed it, rather than $70,000, maybe you're looking at $80,000, but it'd be one way to get there. Or if you guys thought that your reserves could cover that, you would be covered in the future after the loan, after you started doing long-term financing for those projects rather than paying for them as you go.
So I just my main point is I want residents and everybody to know that we're still in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still in the hole,
you know,
pulling out a general fund to cover it.
Yeah, which then is hurting everything else. You know, that those two systems there, to me, should at minimum be paying for themselves. If not, having a little reserve for upgrade, because even you know, even sewer, say, for instance, we do a new plant, we do new lift stations, we still have held some of our lines in between all that. So it's not like if we do that, that's taking care of our maintenance situation.
Yeah.
No, it's not a magic fix-all.
No, no. But it's all, you know, it's still one of the things, if people can't flush their toilet, this hall ain't going to hold enough. Ain't going to be able to hold enough people for it.
Yeah, and I think that the big part of that, just from my perspective, is, you know, when you go through these tough phases, that's when you have issues. You guys did a 10-70% raise. You probably heard a bunch of hell about it. That's how it goes. But committing to that through, like, the next five-year period or whatever, and just saying, hey, we're doing a raise every year, is going to prevent the next 20 years of 10% raises. Now you're going to be getting back of a cost of living adjustment raises.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get back down to that 3 or 5% a year, which should be stomachable. Usually 3 to 5% people aren't up in arms about.
Well, and the problem is they didn't do raises for, what, over 10 years?
That is everywhere.
And it's like they did nothing, and then they did no repairs, or just a couple patches here and there.
I mean, most... What happened, you know, 60s, 70s, grant funds came out, the IEPA said we want clean water, we're going to pay 75% of this to put this in place. But at that time, they didn't require you to have a financial plan for actually taking care of and replacing that in the future. Which now, like USDA, IEPA, you have to kind of show them that you have financial capability to pay this off, as well as pay for the operation, maintenance, and replacement of that in the future. So their idea now is, we will help grant fund you, but in 20 years, we don't want to be in the grant business. We want you to be self-sustaining. We want you to, you know, manage the system. And 40 years ago, municipalities were the people that foot the bill to do these things, because they said, hey, do you guys want clean water? Well, there's not an Aqua or an Illinois American or any of these utility companies that are doing it now. They weren't necessarily here doing it everywhere. So it fell to the board at the time, and then new boards come in and they just inherit that, so.
Which is where we're at now.
So I guess another thing too is if you know, like this $220,000 is coming out of general funds, to me it should go into general funds and not be under water and sewage. I don't know. Our numbers are still way off from where, for a self, you know, and I'm all for even getting it to where it needs to be, to not be so much in the hole, but these projects aren't projects that we can keep pushing off either.
I agree.
So I know that's, and believe me, I'm paying for them just as much as everybody else.
Well, the people on Whitehead don't want sewage in their basement either.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
If we don't do something to that lift station, guessing that's part of the problem.
We're thinking it's more of something in the line, that north south.
I know,
or,
that
yeah, north south
gets clogged too,
though. And it could be, but there's obviously something, you know, in that area that's causing that. And, you know, and deterring this much money out of general funds to pay for something that should be self-sustaining is not even allowing us to do storm sewage upgrades.
Storm sewage, sidewalks.
Mm-hmm. Hydrants.
Hydrants.
We're probably,
yeah,
not going to do hydrants.
But our budget would look a lot different if we sold the sewer system.
Yeah, if we sold the sewer system, we wouldn't even have to worry about any of that. But you also, we don't have control over the rates.
The nice thing is, because we're still way under most municipalities. I think Matt says he pays more still for just water. They don't have sewage. They just have septic tanks. So we're still below what everybody else is paying around us.
You go somewhere like Fisher that just sold recently, Sedora's that sold last few years.
So worst case scenario, and I'm saying worst case scenario, you raise the rates where we budget out, it might be high for a few years, but then 10, 20 years down the road, you know, it can come back down.
Yeah, but can we trust that the boards after us are going to bring that back down?
Yeah. Or the other thing you come into, then you have lines, you know, we got water lines and sewage lines. Some sewage lines are probably 100 years old, aren't they?
Your guys' system was built in 72.
Okay.
So 50 years old.
Yeah, but talking to some of the guys who were around back then, talked to a few of them over the years, they put it in themselves. Like, Jim Bob and, hey, we went through to your house, we just, and they have single line pipe instead of the double, and the, and I'm like.
Even if it is put in perfectly, it's well past its.
Yeah, exactly, and it wasn't put in perfectly way back then.
I think the idea, I mean, ultimately what you want to look at, it'd be different if you were like some for-profit company or something, and you're like, hey, we can raise rates a little bit, make a little bit of money, put this profit in. I mean, you guys are just building reserve. The onus would be on you guys to look at that and be like, you know, our reserve is ridiculous. We don't have a plan. We don't have capital improvement plans for this. Honestly, the best thing a lot of bigger cities do is they build these basically long-term plans where it's an asset management plan, and it says, okay, we have 80,000 feet of pipe. Most sewer pipe lasts 100 years. How much should we budget to have for each year over the 100 years so that in 100 years, assuming everything needs replaced, that's a gravity sewer, you've been diverting X amount of dollars per year to that reserve. And what ends up happening is 20 years, you have to do a couple of sewer replacements, but you got $500,000 in the bank to do it with. And 40 years from there, you kind of hit the same thing.
And it's
not perfect, but...
And that increase, you know, $600,000 is a lot to me and you, but you split it up. You know, you're still talking, you know, if we get that $5 million grant, that's going to split that, your $30 household in half, you know, so we could still, you know, do it $35 or $40, whatever the math comes out to make this. So you're not, you know, substantial, but not quite as... quite as bad as it sounds, I guess, because these I don't see these $200,000. That's a small project still, money wise. So I don't see those going away.
$9 million.
Yeah, and you know that's probably one or two of those a year is probably what we ought to expect to have.
Seems like what we've been doing actually for the last 2 years.
Yeah, and that, and this is just, I'm just talking water, you know, sewage. You know, I don't know the last time we've had to repair any sewage lines.
Well, this lift station's the biggest project we've done.
Yeah.
The sewer and water rate study that we did, too, in addition to the capital improvements we know over these 5 years, it took into account, you know, what we're going to expect, and it had things like that built into it. Was every other year we're going to do a $200,000 water main project. And every other year, we're going to do a $400,000 sewer project, whether that's a lift station, some lining, televising, whatever. All that rate study was kind of building you, set you up for, we don't know what these other improvements are, but based on what we're spending now, it's looking like we're going to spend about $200,000 in capital improvements in water every other year and $400,000 in sewer every other year. So those rates are supposed to get you to that point. Rates might need adjusted based on what actual costs come in. It's getting you closer to that ballpark. You know, to me, I think you guys kind of are in a place where I look at it as this could be a 5-year transition phase to get you. It's not going to happen overnight. You know, everybody wants to be in the black, that's perfect, but you'd have an uprising if you guys went and raised rates 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is what will happen if they sell the system. So,
yeah.
I mean, they'll go up more, probably more than that.
And the thing about that, you know, I work with both private utilities and municipalities. As long as you're managing it well, municipalities can still probably do it cheaper. Private utilities maybe do it better just because that's their business. Everybody that they got is in it 100%. The thing I would be wary about, and it's not to say sell it, don't sell it, I don't care. I mean, that's entirely up to you guys. But if you sell it, you get this big lump of money, plan for that money. Don't say, hey, we want to do this one project with it, because fact is the money's not going to roll in. Your guys' budgets aren't going to be $500,000 in water. You're not going to have $1 million budgets anymore. You're going to have, you know, a couple $100,000 between MFT and property taxes, whatever else you guys have here. It's going to diminish that significantly. Which,
and that's a value of having a 5, 10, 15 year plan, because I don't plan on being here 15 more years. So, you know, if it's a whole new board, at least then they have something like, okay, that's why the rates are where they're at. So I just want it out there, because just so residents know mostly, and that's something we got to start keep looking at. You know, and I know the rate hikes aren't a valuable thing, but we can't keep losing $600,000-$800,000 a year. That takes away from other items that absolutely need to be replaced too. You know, fire hydrants being one of them. If we get a fire hydrant that Matt's and some of the part-time guys have been really servicing the fire hydrants right now, but you're talking some fire hydrants that were put in right after World War II. It's not an issue until you go have a fire and they can't turn the fire hydrant on.
Well, and there's the service lines are too small too.
Yeah, exactly.
We can't put a 2-inch line to it. We need what, six?
6 inches. If it's looped, if it's a dead end, it's supposed to be 8-inch by the.
So it's like we need to. A lot of our lines are way undersized, and that'll lower insurance costs too. If we have a decent lower, what's that called? That
ISO.
ISO. Yeah.
So, where do we cut $1.1 million from?
Sorry, Brandy, you're not getting paid.
Yeah. You'll be finding somebody else to do all this stuff for you.
Oh, I don't know.
Better get used to working a whole lot more.
Yeah, I guess straight back.
So, we got to do this sooner than later.
Have to do it by next month.
What if we have, we used to have special meetings just for this.
Well, we're going to have a special meeting on Tuesday. We can add on to that special meeting on Tuesday if you want to.
It's at a point we got to start.
Because a special meeting on Tuesday, the three resolutions are going to take literally 5 minutes to pass. Unless there's some discussion, and I think they're pretty straightforward. Did you look at them yet? They're in the board packets. They got added late, though. Did you read your board packet?
I've read all of my board packet. When were they added?
Did I ever
add them? At the end, like the last
might have been episode. Yesterday.
Or at least the.
No, it was yesterday. It was yesterday when you sent them to me.
Which ones are these?
The resolutions. There's two resolutions in
there. There are no resolutions in my board packet. Unless we're talking about the.
Tumano PWS.
Okay, yeah, I saw those, and they made zero sense.
It goes along with the grant that we're trying to go for. We need to build mixed signatures and stuff on them.
The signatures?
Yeah, and then we have to do a fair housing one. That is not in your board packet.
That's for rebuild the Illinois grant.
Yeah, there's a fair housing, what is it called? I just brought it up.
What time is your meeting? Tuesday, Rob? 6:30?
It's just 6 o'clock. Do you want to do 6:30? I was going to try 6 o'clock. I was going to try to get out here a little early, but apparently Ryan wants to actually do work.
It's necessary.
I know, right? Where's the...
So these say Rob Murphy, but then they have printed name Brandy Dalton.
That's the resolution.
It's resolutions.
Brandy, I think... the resolutions, Rob. What the resolution is doing is authorizing Rob to then sign the IAPA forms.
Okay.
I believe that's how.
But at the top, it specifically says I, Rob Murphy, but then there's and then the signature line is there.
Because it's a clerk has to sign off on it.
I can double check that. We can make. Let me see.
Does that say the clerk has to?
Well, it says the village clerk.
Well, like for like the MFT resolutions, Brandy's always signed and sealed those.
The fair housing one isn't written yet. We just had a template on that one, so I sent that to Brandy to make pretty.
Yeah, so this is just saying the resolution is to authorize Rob to sign these other IAPA forms. And then Brandy is sealing that this resolution was passed.
Okay.
Notarizing, I guess, is the term.
So basically, on the resolution, we'll have a signature page for Rob and Brandy, and then this is Brandy as a notary.
The resolution page is just going to have Brandy resolving to let Rob... Brandy is notarizing that the board authorized Rob to sign the additional IAPA forms for the loan. The IAPA the IEPA forms for the loan are going to vary. You're going to have some that you're going to have to put in with the application, and then when loan or planning approval and some of this other stuff comes in later on, then it's going to authorize him to be able to sign these forms to complete, to continue through the process, basically.
Right. So my only concern is the box inside the box is a signature and stamp box for the notary.
The notary.
But there's a signature line that then has her name printed on it instead of his.
Right.
As the mayor.
How do your resolutions normally look?
We don't do many resolutions.
Yeah, I think we've only done two.
The only ones I'm very familiar with is the MFT resolutions, and Rob never signs those. Brandy signs and seals those. I think what it is Brandy is notarizing that the board passed this. So she is signing, she is putting her hand saying,
yeah, she signs it because her name's below it.
No, she signs in the square as the notary. It says signature and stamp, seal of notary public.
Right. Signature, date, and then it says Brandy and village.
The square. Inside the square. That's where Brandy signs.
So I can't notarize my own signature.
I'll double check that. I'll get it resolved.
Okay.
And I'll let you know. It may be that she's supposed to, because typically if she's notarizing something, she's attesting a signature.
Right.
So this may need to be Rob. I'll double check that.
Okay.
And then she would stamp and sign in that box. I'll figure it out and I'll get it to you guys tomorrow.
As long as we have it before next Tuesday, right?
I'll get it to you tomorrow. I already said it. Don't give me any leeway. You won't get it. Better idea. I'll put the pro on it. Of course, he did these forms, though.
So we're going to do that and the budget next Tuesday?
Yeah, it'll pretty much be just a budget session.
Yeah, pretty much just to pass the resolutions in the budget session. I also am sending in this email that I've been kind of composing. This email I've been kind of composing to Mark as we go along with questions and stuff. Because if I don't, I'll forget. Is I also ask him if we could go ahead and do the annex for the sewer plant in that meeting too. But I think you have to have a special meeting and stuff. But I don't know if there's enough time frame to do it in that time.
I think you have posting on that, don't we?
Yeah, but we have to have posting on the special meeting too.
Newspaper posting.
Oh, actually.
For a public hearing.
Can the Tuesday meeting just be an extension of this one?
No, because
you're gonna ask
an extension.
Because it has to be the same thing. Okay. Make it out, but. Anything else where we're...
This was attached to this.
Anything else, Ryan?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Pass that over.
Anything else we need to discuss before we get out of here?
Did we go through the whole agenda?
We did.
No, that's my pending stuff.
Okay.
Back there.
So we'll have another meeting next Tuesday. The regular meeting is July 7th. We'll have another meeting.
Paperclip this all back together.
So, anything else for discussion? I just need a motion.
Matt did send out trees that we can do.
Yeah.
And then there's 11 trees, I think, that him and Jeff both went through and said no.
Okay.
Because they're too close to houses or power lines or something.
Well, our bucket truck's still down too, isn't it?
Yeah, and I got an email for that. It's going to be... Instead of buying a new truck, I think it seems like $800, $1,000, we can get that one to where it will recertify. That bucket truck, so.
For how long?
Yeah, but wasn't it
I don't
running?
Know how long certification lasts.
Wasn't it running absolutely horrible? It took, the last time they ran it, it was like.
I couldn't answer that, I don't know.
It took the mechanic forever to get it going. It was like running super rough.
Probably needs a bunch of seafoam dumped in it because it didn't get run.
Well, it needs seafoam, plus it needs the mice kicked out of the carburetor that are living in there.
What's Brad doing? Come
Brad
on.
Brad worked on it. I mean, just to get it going. When that truck only runs three times a year.
Come on, Brad.
Because
So it's different. Do we need a bucket truck?
Yeah. We could rent one.
Stuff like that, you can rent a Lowell or a main lift type thing.
You're probably going to be probably $2,000 to $3,000 by the time you rent it for everything we'd have to.
My email I'm composing here.
With decorations and then a week for tree trimming. And then
I think we need to separate special meeting. Make the other study session. Special meeting to do the things that need to be done.
So there's a few things on here we can adjust.
Maybe not record the one forever.
The tree on James Ameren came in.
And all the wood is gone.
They won't take it down, but they took all the dead out and cut it back away from the power line. So whatever, if it needs to be taken completely down, that'll be added to that list, or if it's on the list already, I don't know.
Safe for this year though. Maybe they can take it down next year.
They won't just come in and take down a whole tree. That was my question. So they actually did more than what they're supposed to by cutting the dead out for us. So
it actually looks pretty healthy.
Yeah, I didn't think it looked bad before Cameron was in there, but I think that's all I got. I don't know if there are any notes or not.
Should we make sure Matt and Justin are here next week to defend what they want?
Makes sense. If you have a stake in the budget, you should be in this meeting. So what I suggested to Rob and Brandy is that we separate the two, have the special meeting for the things that we had decided earlier in the meeting to have a special meeting for, and then because we're not making any approvals of the budget next Tuesday, have a study, adjourn the special meeting, and then open a study session on the budget. It will still require public comment and whatnot, but then we're just here just having the study session to discuss all of the things. And yeah, Justin and Matt should be here too.
Or at least maybe we can schedule them too. So Justin comes first because he has very little stuff. Or, I mean, they both can come at the same time and they can be just set through the boredom. But since Justin only has a very minute stuff, and I think Justin's budget might be squared away because we cut his squad car and we cut... I mean, the only thing that's on there that I kind of want to leave on there on his is his salaries, because we budget for full-timers. We don't use it, there just in case by accident we find three people to hire.
What about that bathroom upgrade?
Oh, is that on there?
I think so.
Well, he can come justify that one then. I don't know if we put that on there. Did? Okay.
It had to be on here because I knew about it.
Well, I know we were talking back and forth. I didn't know if we had put it on, actually.
And if Matt can't make
yeah,
it,
it's on there.
I pretty much went over the whole thing with Matt, so he's more than welcome still.
Well, and something else for Justin's too we can think about is, I guess that's more than just that. I was going to say Lexapol.
That's already been paid for this year.
Has it? Well, it says $10,000 budget item, but that's not just Lexapol. That's
Lexapol is like...
Lexapol, software, IDOT.
Lexapol is like 8,000 of it.
Children's Advocate, Snap Schedules, Alias. There's a bunch of stuff in that category.
The problem we're going to have is eliminating enough. I don't see it happening.
No, we won't get back to black, but if we can shrink the red.
But everything is so minute. We can try our hardest.
And maybe that's something you can talk to Matt about, saying, hey, this is what we give us. And I like, we had this discussion. Give us bare minimum, what you can get by with. Give us a medium,
and then your greatest hits, what you want everything.
I pretty much have and know that already.
Okay.
So.
I think you, I know you were working on it.
It's pretty much the email I sent a month ago or whatever, it pretty much stated what we could cut back, some of we could cut back more, just then I just had the understanding of if we cut it back, like salt for instance, we mm-hmm. cut it back, but that's only going to put us about half of our amount we usually have,
so
which is fine.
Have,
it's
we
just,
might not have salt.
Yeah, which is fine. It's
we
just
might
that,
not have snow.
It's that understanding of if we have tons of snow.
All
right. We were supposed to be really bad this year.
So the most up-to-date one budget was May 22nd.
It's the, there's one in this packet.
One in this packet.
Oh, there we go. Never mind.
Can you send that email back out to everybody, since I really can't send it to everybody?
Yep.
On that, on just the comments for Matt's stuff.
Yep.
I guess I can send it to everybody as long as they don't reply back. I guess that's how it works, is but
yes.
Be better if you just send it.
Contemporaneous conversation. That's the goal.
Well, and the little sidewalk project that I want to do, like over by the old IGA, we can actually probably pull that out of TIF. If, as long as we don't have to pay any money back into TIF again. Because it looks like we'll have $21,000 in there. And that shouldn't cost that much. It's a simple, I think it's a simple fix.
It just depends on the engineer. Don't tell him how much we have.
Thank you.
We have no money.
Sidewalks are good for MFT projects. I know what they're going to do. And you guys are getting rebuilt on one money for that.
For what? Oh, for the pulled out a tip next year, but we need to do it this year.
Do you know what your? Do you guys know what that first installment was? If you guys got it in May for the rebuild Illinois MFT, it's supposed to be like maybe.
I think it was like 4,000.
4,000.
Yeah, like 4,400. Or no. The big chunk.
Yes.
It was 37 or 38.
So you guys, you're supposed to get 6 installments of that, assuming that everything holds true. So over the next 3 years, you should have an extra $70,000 a year for MFT expenditures, like sidewalks.
$38,638.95.
That might be an option to fix some of the drainage on there.
Yeah. You could not get the other 5, but just make sure you keep that one.
Do you have a ballpark figure of adding a manhole, what that costs?
If you need to cut in a manhole to a sanitary sewer,
uh-huh.
saying this is an average depth, say 10-foot sewer, you're probably looking at $7,500.
Okay.
So under 10.
Maybe. You could get to 10 depending on where you're at. I mean, if you have pavement removal and replacement everywhere,
killing
you could
me.
Certainly get there. You know, on a big project, you're getting these things installed for $3,000 or $4,000 a pop. But if someone's mobilizing, bringing it here for one thing, you're digging in pavement, you could hit 10, but I would suspect it's going to be under 10.
And these are small sewers, too. I mean, they're not the big, huge lines, right?
The depth will be the big issue there.
Yeah, because we're at the park corner. We're probably pushing 10 foot right there.
Where are you at?
Whitehead and
Holtz.
Holden.
Is it storm or sanitary?
Storm.
We have long sections.
And I only know that because the Holtz house, the resident on the north side of the road there on the corner, they found where their basement was tied in and they were right at 10 foot.
Okay. Well, your sewer's deeper than that then.
So it's, I think it was between 8 and 10 foot they were at. And that should have been, you would think that was higher than the actual sewer line, but don't ever know that either.
And I kind of wonder if there's some manholes there that just got covered up over the years.
There very well could
and
be.
And I don't know how to find them, so especially since we put steel slag down on the road.
Televising.
Oh, that's true.
Now, when you televise, that side of town, or is your how big is your line that you got to put in?
They basically looks like a big remote control car.
Okay.
Because these things are on tracks, because you're going to be going through debris and other things like that. So like an 8-inch thing is maybe 6 inches wide by a foot and a half long. And as you get bigger, you put bigger setups in there to go through bigger pipes. So
you don't have to worry about getting very big here.
Right. I mean, your storm sewer, your biggest storm sewers are going to be right out there by the DOT crossing under the railroad tracks they were doing, I guess. And that's probably like a 54-inch pipe or something.
So on the northeast part there where we're talking about, are you going to need manholes to get into those anyways? Because we can't, currently we cannot get our, which I don't know what, 4 inches or whatever, because you get so far in at 90s.
You're coming into like a catch basin or something.
Yeah, because we have zero manholes.
I mean, the solution I would tell you is kind of the one you brought up initially, is if you know where you want a manhole, dig up the storm sewer there, put a manhole in, and you can get both ways. Like if you go like mid-block, say you had 800 foot or 1,000 foot of no storm access or anything, is if you know where this pipe runs, you dig it up, you drop a manhole in between, and then you can, most televising equipment can go about 500 or 600 feet in a direction. Mm-hmm. So if you have 1,000 feet, you set a manhole in the middle.
Which I think's what our jetter does. I think that's the length of it,
right,
too.
Right, you should be able to go from that manhole both ways then, at least.
Okay. So we might have to do some brainstorming with you maybe on where, what our issues are and then where to best to put.
Yeah, and like, I mean, this summer, we're almost done with the water mapping, so we're doing the storm sewer mapping right after that. So as we're doing that, we're going to go through and shoot all this stuff in, and we'll probably do some investigation of that one,
okay,
too. So we could, I mean, whenever you guys want, if you want me to come look at it, that's fine.
Is that again inserted?
I spent all day today in Westville trying to track down a storm sewer that nobody knows where it is.
I guess
read those. Hold on.
Email wise, Jared, I've talked to most of those residents there, and they know
it's
on that corner that it's when we can get a manhole in and do some investigating, because right now we kind of know where it goes, but we don't know where it stops, and there's no easy. The only solution is a manhole and begin there. And then it's,
yeah, I did the same thing. You'd have to get up and walk around it to see. Look.
Yeah. We've pumped twice, I think, just twice there at Whitehead and Reynolds, or Holden.
I think, honestly, that helps at least show that we're doing something.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that,
we can't,
that
every,
does more than...
Every storm, we can't send somebody out there to
yeah.
pump.
And it's always been, ever since I've kind of lived in that area, it's been one of those things that would hold water, but it would make its way out, but now there's something that's actually
blocking. Collapsed or...
Yeah. And it's, and I thought that storm sewer would have went west to the drainage ditch, but Matt says it actually goes east.
Goes out to the 45?
Yeah, so I don't know if there's a main out there. I haven't asked that many questions. Or
where is this at? This is
Holden and Whitehead,
Holden
the
and
corner
Whitehead.
Of the park there.
That's the northwest side of town, right?
Uh-huh.
I thought all that stuff went back out.
Yes, that's what Matt's saying it is. I would have thought it would have went west.
Because we have a new,
there's a ditch.
Sent, yeah, it goes down Austin.
Well, that and there's the ditch out there on Woodworth.
Well, that's kind of your high point. Like, if you look at the map there, like the Deer Path area and just south there, I think you're kind of at a peak there. So water probably flows away all directions. So you might just be the, when the storm sewer is put in, they had one at 45.
I know Deer Path goes in the retention pond, and the retention pond does go west.
Right.
Out to that drainage ditch.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure, and this is just looking at your head old storm maps, which are as good as whatever, whoever did them. But it looked like everything was supposedly tying in over to like P Street, but then got to 45 and went into all that.
Where does it go then when it hits 45? Where?
It goes down, you know, where the railroad and 45 meet.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, everything comes down there, and I'm pretty sure they've got a stormwater pump station there that IDOT has built. And basically, things go to there, and when it gets real big, I don't know where that thing pumps out to. I know that one of our electrical engineers out of Naperville worked on the design for the electrical on that thing, so I could ask them and see if they've got.
Okay, that would be nice to know.
I'm not sure where it
goes. And I know that pump has failed before, and there was water clear up to the railroad tracks.
A couple times.
Yeah.
The leak at Holden.
It's next week, hopefully. Okay. It was surveyed and then Bob.
Sitting today, so
yeah.
I figured they might have.
No, it's been on the. It had to wait. It was a coronavirus.
It's stuff like that too that's costing us money in our water budget too. Because that's a lot of water.
So we had to wait for them to come out and locate it, and then Bob, he's been on the schedule since he's been back to work.
You guys got all your new meters in now for your water stuff?
I think so.
I think yeah.
You might see an uptick in charges because it's going to track that better. I would be interested to see, you know, just if you look at your water usage from this year to last, and just see if there's a 20% increase. It could just be from better meters.
Yeah.
My mind's gone up a lot.
Everybody's has gone up.
Kids
in the fall should be good for the village, bad for the people.
And we haven't actually instituted the rate increase yet.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so that's not going to go well.
Double and double.
We got to pay for it, though, somehow. We can't just keep going in the negative.
It's cheaper than a lot of other utilities.
I know it is. But still, it hurts when it kind of just jumps all of a sudden.
That's how it goes. You guys haven't been done any favors by the past boards. I mean, just.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that's part of the reason they didn't do it in the past boards, because they wanted to. They don't want to raise anybody. I'm glad the sewage plant's getting looked at, because ever since my first visit out there, I'm like, this thing ain't going to last forever.
Oh, good.
When you look at the breakers that are obsolete, you can't even get new ones for those anymore. That's a problem.
Did we get the OSHA thing taken care of?
I think everything but
the wiring.
The wiring and
and that truck training.
Who's supposed to do the vac truck train?
Blaine from Farm Management. Farm Fleet.
Farm Fleet.
Do we have that scheduled?
I put in another email to him this evening before I came here because we had scheduled it and then the governor's order got extended. So I'm not sure when he's actually allowed to come out. So.
I know Matt got everything he needed because Matt was digging. He wanted like the manual. He wanted like a bunch of other stuff on the truck. And I know Matt dug all that stuff, blew the dust off of it, and got it to him.
We did lose one part-time summer. It ended up being kind of a mutual thing, so.
One the email sent, I think we'll just, some growing pains, I think, and they're kids.
It wasn't work habit, it was, he didn't know how to tell us either that he had another job that he wanted to do, so.
I think it's kind of cool, they're teaching him a lot of stuff, though. I got a kick out of watching two of them run around on as they put it, they had no adult supervision that day, so they're going out to find stuff to be busy. They just don't want to sit around. So they grabbed the Toro and were trimming trees that would touch people's trucks and going through all the cul-de-sacs. And then they were picking up like little like stuff that they could pick up to put in the little Toro and then take out to the dump. Like if they were driving along and stuff they could pick up real quick and throw in there. They stayed pretty busy. I was like, that's perfect. I like that. Instead of just going and hiding when there's nothing to do, they're actually like, we gotta find something to do.
They're that motivated. Matt needs to have a list of stuff.
He's
like
got
little things. I think he's getting there.
There's a list on the calendar board that he's got, so it's all there. We'll have to update it for July here soon. He's mostly working on manholes, getting those lifted for MFT when
flushing.
They go through.
Doing lots of flushing.
Did all the flushing. the meters the last couple of weeks was getting the bigger meters in, mowing.
I was meaning just nobody's here. These guys are just keeping.
Yeah. Back oh no. Work. Yeah. No. They're
here's a list of stuff you can do randomly.
And
that might have been one of the things on their list too when they drove by. And of course they're like, "We didn't have no supervision, so we're keeping busy." Like perfect. They're
straightening signs. Tree. They had to get all the tree removal from what Ameren cut down. And our dump is
full,
almost maxed out.
That's the one thing I do not want to cut off the budget is that burning thing. Because that's going to, we'll pay for it in 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Easy.
If, not that we want to, but if we need to get a loan to get it for a couple of years.
Or if, even if we could do half and half.
Yeah.
Pay half and half like we're doing on the end loader thing. So that just kind of, because we're going to pay out half that anyway this year.
Probably more if they'd see the, the pile change. That's there.
Anything else?
I have one more thing.
Yes, sir.
I just want to publicly thank Jennifer Eisenminger and Charlie Eisenminger for their concerted efforts this past weekend. Saturday from 2 to 3, there was a community protest for justice at Westside Park, and I've seen a lot of these, but this one was the best one I've seen.
Of course it was in Tolono.
It was a Unit 7, not a Tolono thing. But it was a Unit 7 community protest for justice, and no matter which side of the issue any of us are on, I think that the way it was handled, the way everybody conducted themselves out at Westside Park, shows a lot about the Unit 7 community. So I just want to publicly thank them for the event that they put on, and also for Officer Hayden and Chief Livingston for being out and visible at the park as well during the event.
I think we might have one other officer on too.
I only spotted two.
Really?
Yeah. So, thank you for everyone for their peaceful interactions in our community.
On that note, Dan's resigning from the police department. He's done, retiring for the third time. So,
well, thank you, Officer Morgan, for your service to our community as well.
We're going to attempt to try to convince him to maybe do our investigations and some, like, not, you don't have to go do patrol, you don't have to go do that stuff, but just do like ancillary things. We're gonna try. I don't know if he will or not.
Almost contract style stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff we don't. Oh, and then Adrian should be back here. I think in a month.
What was 9 months?
I thought
it seemed like Christmas time.
Okay, it might be. I thought when I was talking to Justin, it seemed like it was going to be sooner than later, but because their one mission got canceled.
We're on the downside slope.
Yeah, we're on the downside slope, but the one mission he was doing got canceled, and they've been kind of not doing what he was sent over there to do. I don't even understand all of it.
It's all right, as long as we get him back.
As long as we get him back and he gets back safe. And we're not going to rush him to come back, but we're going to highly encourage him to come back as soon as possible because we need him. And so, but no, and if anybody knows anybody that's interested in.
I know we've got one applicant.
We do, and Justin was supposed to reach out to him. So
it's not experienced, so.
We'll have to get PTI, and we need to know as soon as possible because I know PTI is doing a September class, and it's going to be, is it September or August? It's going to be huge. Their next class is, like, huge. If the governor allows them to have it. I thought they were going to
do it August and September like they did
yeah.
March and April.
But they're going to be big.
We got, yeah.
Because there's so many people waiting for BTI right now, so it's going to be hard to get somebody in. So.
Is that program going to be around?
What?
BTI?
I think the state knows they can't get rid of it right now, just like it did last time.
Well, they're completely self-sufficient now. So. And the things about BTI now is you have to actually pay for it when you send people to it. Where the state training board, they cut the state training board budget. They just...
We would used to get reimbursed for it. Now we won't.
Well, they used to... you didn't even have to pay.
Yeah, they reimbursed PTO.
And now you might or might not.
Yeah.
Probably not. All right, cool. I'm done jabbering.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.